This is CliffCentral.com.
We've got a whole bunch of current affairs, hot talking points to get into. I said in the last hour I want to talk about cyclists getting eaten by cougars. That's going to have to wait, Sia.
Okay.
It's a good story, though.
Oh.
It's a good story. It's a sad story, but it's a story that I'd like to share with you.
And literal cougars, like the animal.
Mountain lion. Big cat. Scary as all hell. Big teeth.
Not middle-aged woman going after.
Not Courtney Cox, no. Is Justice Withers on the line here?
Yes, I'm here, Ben.
Justice,
I don't know about your story lineup. I can't contribute much to cougars showing cyclists.
That's okay, Justice. We're a team here. Most importantly, you bring us the burning platform brought to us by Nando's each and every week. And when Gareth's not here, well, I fear not, Justice, because you are the one person that's going to take conversation forward. And I'm looking at your sort of talking points. It is a burning platform of burning platforms today. What would you like to start with?
Oh, let's start here in Gauteng, because I've been – can I just say, you know, Ben, there are times – when you look at someone and you look at an organization and think, what were you thinking? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just putting your foot in it. And for me, the ANC in Gauteng, and I can't blame some of the leaders, whether it's David Makura or, you know, Panyaza Lesufi and so forth. It's the ordinary members. So, you know, last weekend, the ANC here in Gauteng went to its conference. The ANC in KZN went to its conference. The ANC in Gauteng then, you know, it elects the chair, who's David Makura, the deputy, Panyaza Lesufi, you know, the energetic guy, becomes the deputy, and a whole bunch of others get elected. But in the new executive, lo and behold, Qedani Mahlangu, who was key, was front and center in the Life Esidimeni saga. You remember she was the health MEC, who signed off on that project. In fact, who championed it and pushed for it to happen. And 144 South Africans were moved out of perfectly run hospitals and taken to private homes that were masquerading largely as care homes, and 144 people died. 144 people died. When the story broke, it became serious. She ran off and said, "I'm studying in the UK."
Yeah, that was very, very sneaky.
For months, we couldn't find her. For months, people were saying, "Come and appear before former deputy chief justice Dikgang Moseneke." And finally, when the nation was in an uproar, she came back and her explanation was basically, "It wasn't me." Will you play that song, Sia? "It wasn't me, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, it was someone else, it was my juniors, it was the officials. Basically, I didn't know," when she was the one who signed off on it. So here's someone who's sort of kind of said, well, it wasn't me. I'm sort of sorry it happened. Oh, why are you being so nasty? It's only 144 people. Remember, these people, some of them died. They were found with paper in their stomachs. They were starving. Yeah. And all they had to do was, they could do was eat the toilet paper. There was no food.
Yeah,
there was no water.
I read somewhere that there was no water because they didn't want to clean up because they were worried they're going to wet the bed. So therefore, they were given no water. I mean, this was the level of care these people were actually not getting.
That's the story. And so you think ANC members would say, you know what? Let's think once or twice a bit about this. But no, they go and elect this person. And they also elect another former health MEC, Brian Hlongwa, to the provincial executive committee of the party. So now people are jumping up and down and saying, "Hold on, what are you saying? Can you imagine if you are a relative, a brother, a sister, a mother, a father of one of the 144 who died?" And by the way, there's, I think, about 20 plus other people who still haven't been accounted for. So it's, "Oh, you know, we last took justice to a care home somewhere, and he's never. We don't know where he is. Oh, he was last seen being carted off to some place. Mm. We don't know. We just don't know. So the ANC goes and elects these people, and that's it. That's it. Just think, no, it's okay.
But Justice, is this just arrogance or complete and utter stupidity? I mean, I'm really grappling with what the sort of takeout here is and what these guys are even doing.
You know, I've thought a bit about it, and I think after a while, when you live in a society, in a place where you are powerful, you become drunk on power.
Yeah.
And you start, your view of the world starts getting skewed. And the skew of your view gets skewed because you think, oh, I can get away with it. Because think about it, you and you and I are jumping up and down. Sia is probably flat on the floor weeping.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we have a certain set of values that you don't treat people that way. You say sorry. You take full responsibility and so forth and so forth. But if you are a political leader and again, you steal people money from people and you build Nganda, you steal money from people and there is impunity, you start saying, oh, people don't stand up, so I can do absolutely what I like. And so you just keep going at it. You just keep on going. You just keep on stealing. You just keep on putting compromised people into positions of power. I mean, you'll remember that here in Gauteng, we had a guy, an MEC, Humphrey Memezi, who went and bought, with your money,
mm-hmm.
A painting. I think it was from McDonald's, the restaurant, for 10,000 rand. And it was, why? What is it for? He said, no, just, you know, you're just spending money. So that was it. And he's still a very, very influential leader within the ANC in Gauteng. So the point I'm making is, we live in a world where people don't realize that, or rather, society doesn't punish bad behavior. And so the ANC thinks, it's okay. We can elect people like these to these positions and nothing will happen.
Yeah,
when is the election? Next year, we'll be queuing, my brother. And we're just going to say, thank you, ANC, for giving us a leader who oversaw the death of 144 people, and you think that that person should continue. So it's nothing new, really. There you have it.
You're right.
It's all go.
Just as my second favorite political commentator on Twitter said, Tom Eaton, he said that basically the ANC are just proving they're a political party of patronage. And they're just a corrupt machine. So they don't care about these things. Like you said, there's a common value system that we have as people. You don't treat people in a certain way. They don't seem to have it. I mean, that's like not having legs. Just,
absolutely. I think what you've just quoted from Tom is absolutely the thing. Who benefited from the life is the many thing? It was because people were lining up saying, there's money to be made.
Yes.
Let's take the money that Life Esidimeni, which is a private entity, was making, and we will pass it on to our friends and our relatives and so forth. Those people, and people need to realize that those people who died were taken from registered, accredited facilities where they were looked after by nurses, social workers, doctors, people who are qualified. They were taken to a house where Mrs. Malala was just turned her two of her rooms into a facility. No education, no training, no skills, no experience in looking after people who had particularly the challenges that those people had. And so, so when he says it's become a patronage network, everyone at the ANC conference in that room at the weekend knew that we, those people died for a few dollars more. They died for money. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened. People just wanted to make money off those contracts, and they were sent off without care. People were put on open trucks. Patients were put on open trucks like cattle and headed off to all sorts of places. Some didn't even have their medical files with them. So he's absolutely right. This was about money. The money was made. The ANC looks around and says, ban justice, see ya? These are voting cattle. They'll be voting again next year. And you know what? I from where I'm sitting, it won't hurt. The ANC might win again in this province because we don't stop and reflect as voters enough about, you know, this is what they look at me and think of.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad. I mean, like, this isn't exactly a recent story. This has been going on for quite some time. But every time you go through the facts of what happened, it's just chilling to think that this was allowed, even just conceived in the first place, that people thought this could be an idea that's going to pass. But Justice, talking about other kind of voting, sorry, the story is actually just depressing me. The other kind of voting, Zimbabwe seemed to be doing something quite important on the 30th of July, which, Sia, is a Monday.
This calendar thing of yours, Ben. Okay, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so first time since 1980 that Robert Gabriel Mugabe's not going to be on the ballot. He must be upset about that.
He's very upset about it. But, I mean, can you imagine this? If you were born in 1950, you'd have been born into an apartheid-style colonial Rhodesia. And then you would, at age 20, it would be, freedom has arrived in Zimbabwe, and you'd go and vote. And whose face was on the ballot? Robert Mugabe.
Yeah.
And then you'd go to vote every 4 years, I think, in Zim. And every 4 years, whose face would be on the ballot? 1980, 84, 88, 92, 96, 2000.
Shucks. I mean, he's basically been on more ballots than Oprah's been on magazine covers.
And then, boom, we had all that stuff that happened last year. And suddenly Robert Mugabe is not around anymore. It's quite a thing that's happened in Zim. And so I think this is it's a big moment for Zimbabwe. It's a big moment for Zimbabwe. It could be a turning point. This election could mean that Zimbabwe has broken with the big man syndrome and it's a new beginning. A young guy, Nelson Chamisa, is leading the main opposition the MDC, and you know, there's a lot of hope that this young guy might be someone who turns things around, who changes things. But, you know, hope and reality, sadly, are two different things. We can hope all we like that freedom and democracy has arrived in Zim. But I can, when I look at Zim today and I think, what are the chances of a free and fair election? I wonder if there's really a chance for a free and fair election. I wonder if there's really that we're not rushing to make Zimbabwe into something that it's not. And I think what we've been doing is saying, yeah, Mugabe's gone and Zimbabwe's fixed. But actually, Zimbabwe's not fixed. So when you talk about the opposition, when you talk about Nelson Chamisa and others, you say they have a chance and people are talking about them. But just think about what happened last week with their IEC, the National Electoral Commission.
Mm-hmm.
They decided that no, from now on, people will when you go in and vote in South Africa, no one can see what you're putting on your ballot paper, and you fold it and you go and throw it in the box. Suddenly, the Electoral Commission in Zimbabwe changed the way the ballot desk sits, so that cops and soldiers who will be guarding can look at you. And so SCR walks in there, they can actually see that, yeah, there is getting the ballot paper. What's he doing? And there are fears that, ooh, you know, they might be able to see who he's voting for. And suddenly people are saying, but this might lead to intimidation. People might have an inkling of what I'm putting down on my ballot paper.
But
secondly,
that sounds nonsensical. I mean, that is, how hard is it to make a booth? I mean, if you give me 10 minutes in a cardboard box, I'll make you something secure.
Exactly. But they have gone out of their way to make the booth insecure. This is the key thing. The booth is now insecure and looks increasingly like, no, I might not see. But now I might not be able to see, but I'm going to intimidate you into thinking I can see, and therefore you will vote a certain way because I'm keeping an eye on you. If you look at the way things have panned out over the past few years, there have been images on WhatsApp and Twitter of people, villagers somewhere in Mutare and so forth, being shepherded to go and listen to ZANU-PF and Emmerson Mnangagwa's party, Mugabe's party, while he spoke. So there you are in your village in Bryanston, and soldiers arrive and say, why aren't you going to listen to the president speak? Come on now, get a move on. Let's go. I'll wait for you at the gate. And then you have to go and listen to Emmerson Mnangagwa speak, whether you support or you want to go to that rally or not, doesn't matter. That electoral commission that we spoke about that has changed the booth has also there's lots of errors. There was a picture during the rounds that you might have seen of an entry in the register where a person born in 1884 is going to vote in this election. Who is this guy born in 1884 going to vote in the Zim election? So the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission hasn't said why all these problems haven't been fixed, why it continues to have so many people, so many dead people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, that's the thing. In the last couple of elections, a lot of people remarkably came back from the dead. So it's quite a tough thing to monitor this.
Well, you're still registered. But for me, one of the key things is that you have this new dawn in Zimbabwe and so forth. But if you, if CIA starts a party and says, I'm going to run in Zimbabwe, I'm Zimbabwean and so forth, I'll tell you now, he will not appear in all the government media outlets. So he won't be on television. On ZBC, he won't be in the Herald and other many government newspapers that are funded by taxpayers' money. For many, many people, there is nothing else to listen to in Zimbabwe except, and I know that it's very boring, Sia, for you, but the, you know, unless you can hustle up some data and then get Cliff Central and the blending platform. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can't listen to anything else except the ZBC. And all you're going to see is Emmerson Mnangagwa and ZANU-PF. So wow. Media freedom, some, but no, actually not that much unless you have some money to buy. So basically,
we're going to say hopes are quite medium to low. This election is going to go well, is where we're getting with this.
You know, I suspect there won't be as much violence as we saw last time around, but I think there is widespread intimidation of people. If you already have people being shepherded off to go and listen to Mnangagwa by force, you can imagine people will be visited and saying, you know what, go and vote today or else. Mm-hmm. And when you're told go and vote, you will also be told who to vote for. So it's quite a thing. You know, I find it extraordinary. I can't remember his name, but one cabinet minister said recently that they want, as former freedom fighters, accept anyone else winning if it's not a ZANU-PF president. That means that he was saying, oh, we won't accept Nelson Chamisa. And you have to stop and say, well, what does it mean? You're saying that the army will go out and cross and fight if things don't change. So I've always said that Emmerson Mnangagwa is not quite the Messiah. And I still believe that. I don't think we're quite there on the changes in Zimbabwe. I think that we're still on the long road, and maybe we will get there in the future.
Okay.
But this election is has its ups and downs, shall we say.
Justice, speaking of roads, is this whole BRICS thing doing anything other than cluttering Santon's roads? Because it's an absolute shit show at the moment. You cannot. I mean, okay, before we get into what's really going on here, just run me through the process of these conventions. Do they use the Santon CBD because it makes South Africa look good? Like, hey, look at this. We've got this really great place. Like, why doesn't somebody like this go to, like, Gallagher Estate or that place where the ANC always have their midnight meetings? Why must they clog up a central business district in an economy that doesn't need any more hindrance?
Yeah, I think it's also, look at me, look at my... Yeah. Big bad city. I mean, to choose the Santon Convention Center, you've basically just, thrown the whole of Santon into gridlock, where traffic, particularly in rush hour, is already pretty bad. So, it's a bit of a see me, see how well I'm doing. Look at my big city. Look at all the construction. Look at the nice buildings. You see, we are players too. You will remember that the BRICS grouping for us was quite an interesting thing. There was Brazil, so BRICS stands for Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And then someone kind of had a weird moment at some point and said, but what about South Africa? We can't leave them behind. So that's why you have BRIC and a smaller nyana, little nyana, small.
It's like an apostrophe S, but where's our A? BRICS, though.
So we don't have, we are not equal partners in that constellation. Russia is a major, major global player.
Mm.
Economically, it's pumping. India is growing like nobody's business. Brazil has faltered. It's in a bit of a poor state. Russia has been a Cold War power, remains a power in the post-Cold War world. Many people say that, they seem to be in control of Donald Trump and so forth. So what you have is a situation where we are constantly trying to say, we are like them, but we are still a small player in this constellation. So I think we are showing off a bit. Is there substance? A lot of these things are yakety yakety, talk shop, ah, da da da. Thank you very much. Go home and nothing much there. South Africa hasn't, and the entire group, BRICS grouping hasn't really succeeded as sort of forming an alternative conversation to the, as one would say, Western neoliberal consensus. They've tried to yank the agenda the other way, but as a grouping, it hasn't grown that much. It was started in 2006, and there have been frequent meetings. The last one in South Africa was in Durban, at the Durban Convention Center in 2013. But if you were to ask Jacob Zuma, who was our president then, what have we got through BRICS? It was a lot of talk, but not much that substantial. This time, we've got China pledging 200 billion. I think it was 14.7 billion US dollars of investment. So it's quite a substantial chunk, but a lot of it is loans as well. So they've loaned Eskom a big whack of money.
I thought the Chinese were smart. Why are they giving Eskom money?
They are smart because what they've essentially done is they might have bought. If we can't pay that loan, we'll be going to them and saying, turn your loan into equity. That means that take the money you've given us, we won't give it back to you, but you can now own Kusile Power Station or Midupi Power Station. So you're selling off the family silver by getting into debt. It's a bit like me, you and I, Ben, know that Sia's got a lot of cash lying around. Mm. So I go to Sia and say, you know, I need 100,000 rand urgently. Will you give it to me? He says, yeah, sure. But if you don't give it back, I'm taking your car. I say, oh, okay. In a few weeks, I've charged the money at some nightclub in Branston, and I can't pay him back, and he takes the car. So that is something we need to be very careful about here in South Africa.
Without sounding too cynical, we know Eskom are not going to do very well here. That they don't know how to run as a business, so... It's only a matter of time until China. I mean, let's be honest. These guys have analysts. They have teams scouring the planet for investment opportunities. They are all super, super educated. And it's like bringing a knife to a gunfight, negotiating with these people. And this is what China know. They're not malicious. They're just very smart. So they have essentially bought parts of Eskom yesterday.
Mm.
So when this does come into fruition, what does this mean for us when our state's utilities or something like that is owned? I mean,
should we start learning Mandarin now?
Is this a better thing for us? Because of course they're going to default on this loan.
Well, the key thing is to look at other jurisdictions. I see Cyril Ramaphosa has invited Zambia to be here this few days. And so the Zambians are here. But one of the things about Zambia and so forth is that they took out loans from China and said, we'll pay it back by giving you concessions to mine copper in Zambia. And the story hasn't been as fantastic as all that. And you know, China is running a lot of the mines, not all of them. And there's been complaints that Chinese labor, that Chinese expertise is used there, and jobs have been shared, and this isn't about the Zambians any longer. So you know, your concerns are valid, and I think in negotiating, with entities like the China Development Bank and others. I hope that people like Phakamani Hadebe, who is the new CEO of Eskom, are awake to the dangers that lie there. You know, investment is always nice. We want investment. But if 200 billion rand flows into South Africa, but ordinary South Africans don't get jobs, and you suddenly see what happened in Botswana with the building of the airport where Chinese labor is brought in, when we have labor, then it's totally, absolutely useless. So I hope Cyril Ramaphosa, when he signed those deals, thought deep about these things and took a moment to say, yeah, this is how we'll do it, and this is how it will be different. Otherwise, you know, there will be a backlash, and that backlash will be very painful for South Africa and for ordinary South Africans, I think.
Yeah, I just like, you know what, sometimes businesses take loans. A lot of businesses run in debt, but it's a functional debt in which they can further themselves. You know, take for instance, if I wanted to become a tour operator, is that Justice? And I said to you, Justice, I need R1 million for a bus. You give that to me. I can make money on that. I can get a business. I can pay you back. This money to Eskom is going into a toilet because there is such this cavernous hole. So it doesn't make sense for me. Like this money is, it's like SAA when they get bailed out. They don't get bailed out so they can progress. They get bailed out to fill a hole. There's still, it's just plaster jobs. That's all it is, because they're still the same people. It's still the same cronyism that's going to get people working there.
Yeah, this is, this is a real concern. Eskom, we saw the results, Eskom results on Monday.
Yeah.
They showed that there was 19 billion rand unaccounted for expenditure. Now, that means that 19 billion rand, I don't try to imagine 19 billion rand, because you're going to get a headache.
I'm just trying to picture the zeros, and it's a bit too much.
Exactly. Thank you. I need a pill right now just to deal with my migraine thinking about those zeros. But that's what tells you, if you can lose 19 billion rand and not be able to say, this is how 19 billion rand was lost, the accountants can't tell you, the auditors can't tell you, then you get entrusted with this money. You know, it's a moment to reflect. And for me, you know, I'm a big fan, by the way, of the new leadership at Eskom. I think Jabu Mabuza has been amazing at Telkom. I think that Phakamani Hadebe has made some mistakes with the labor negotiations, but is a new kind of leader in these entities, and maybe will be able to turn things around. That said, to see Eskom, given what has gone before, being where it is now, you stop and say, are these the guys to be putting us in a situation where they very well might end up giving us selling off Medupi or Kusile, and that doesn't augur well for South Africa at all to have that kind of exposure.
No, because again, you're using the rest of Africa, as you've mentioned, as a sort of reference point. These things don't generally go well. They don't generally get uplifting, because China aren't here to uplift countries. They're also running a business. So what a lot of people forget, that in the global world, countries also just try and make money for themselves.
China definitely has a very clear strategy. Yeah. And their strategy is to build infrastructure that benefits China. They are very clear about number one, like many other countries, like the U.S. So the key, you know, if we were to stop and say what's happening in Sandton and it's all busy on the roads and so forth, South Africans and Africans need to get out of those meetings when they end and say, what did we get out of this? Because if you signed agreement after agreement and all you've got is, we've given this to China, we've given that, and you haven't stopped and said, you know what, that 200 billion will lead to 10,000 or 20,000 South African jobs, then you're missing the moment. Because, you know, for all his faults and for all his dastardly actions, Donald Trump is using something that's real, and it's that here in my little patch in my neighborhood, I have to create jobs for Americans. You don't have to go about it in the way that he's going about it. You don't have to be xenophobic and anti-immigrant and all these things. But South Africans need to stop and say, here at home, we've got 11 million people without jobs. We've got 37% unemployment. And so what we need to do is look at every agreement that we sign and say, have we put 100,000, another 100,000 of those 11 million people into a job? If that's the case, and these are sustainable South African jobs, then Cyril Ramaphosa will have started a new conversation. Otherwise, we are just an extension of China, particularly building stuff for itself, taking resources out of South Africa and South Africa, and we're not getting anything out of it except a nice picture with Xi Jinping, mm-hmm. and a goodbye, and that's it. So absolutely, care needs to be taken in all these negotiations. It should be interesting.
Yeah, well, Justice, from jobs to 90,000 rand on KFC. I don't know if that's a real segue, but there's a big story that you might have some feelings about.
I have very strong feelings about this. You know, Sia, isn't that when you go out to lunch, in, you know, I know you like to go to very fancy places, but when you're feeling, you know, it's the 24th of the month and you think, you know what, I'm going to just have a smaller nyana, little, not too expensive meal, a meal for one. You go out and get, you know, two pieces of chicken and some chips from KFC.
Okay.
Now, I want you to imagine 90,000 rands worth of KFC. I think you can fill
it. At least buy the good chicken if you're going to steal that much money.
But what do you buy at KFC for 90,000 rands?
90,000 rand.
That is a whole lot of buckets or chips or nuggets or pops, whatever it is. It's just, no, man, guys. How did this happen?
So there's a municipality in the Eastern Cape. It's the former Queenstown. It's the Komani municipality. In the Komani municipality, we hear of a municipal manager who gets appointed. Now, he gets appointed to help fix this place. This place is so broke. There is just no money in this place that they are selling off the municipal grader. So the thing you see they're fixing roads with, they're selling it off because there's no money. We got to raise some money. They are every day or every week, there's several power cuts, water shortages. It's bad. It's bad in Komani. You just don't wanna. You know, you're eating your KFC, boom, the lights go out. You're eating your KFC, boom, there's no water to wash your hands. So this guy gets appointed. And he's appointed and he arrives and it's all go and it's all good. And lo and behold, he says, yay, I got the job. What should I do? And he goes, he goes and buys everyone KFC. Not once, not twice, not several times over. And the bill comes back at 90,000 rands. The last time we spoke about KFC is when we spoke about Wendy Lucas, the premier of the Northern Cape. You'll remember that she spent 10,000 rand at KFC, and we thought she, how shall I put it, was tucking in too much into the good chicken. But this guy is just the champion of wasteful expenditure. How does he do it? How did he get to 90,000 rand? And so, you know, for me, I look at this and I say, what we spoke about right at the beginning about I can get away with this. I can spend a municipality's money on this and nothing will happen. In a place where there's power shortages, there's water shortages. You know, in Queenstown, things are so bad financially. They sold the fire engine. So if Sears House burns down, there isn't a fire engine to rush up to your house and come and put the fire out. That's how broke they are. They have to sell the fire engine. Mm. And this guy, Chris Magwanana, the municipal manager, goes and spends the money on food and KFC. And he says it was catering. So carte blanche asked him, on your list of priorities, Mr. Magwanana, it is more important, it seems, to spend 90,000 rand on fried chicken than to clean up the town and the townships.
That's a fair question.
That's a good question. And he says, the priorities of this municipality have been set is the roads, electricity, and cleanliness of the city. So this guy, Derek Watts, says, but you haven't answered the question. Then he turns around and says, if you compare to what you spend each month on cleaning the town and township, that 90,000 rand is far less than what we spend. You see, this is the problem. He thinks, he doesn't stop and say, why am I even spending 1 rand on KFC? If I want lunch, let me take my own money and go and buy some lunch and not spend taxpayers' money, ratepayers' money. But no, he says, no. Look, this is nothing compared to what you're supposed to spend on cleaning the township, not eating it at KFC. Anyway, if there is anything that says to you, man, we need to do better, it's this guy, 90,000 rand on chicken.
Look, I know Cyril's got more of a job at the moment getting selfies with Jinping, but I mean, isn't that one of those big speeches? He was like, send me to places that need me in this country. I mean, it sounds like he needs to go to Queenstown with like a shambok and say, Chris, what the bloody hell are you doing? This is a prime example of how you were just going against any kind of positivity and any stance towards anti-corruption here.
Yeah, someone said with that amount of wings, surely they should be flying.
Whoever that was actually deserves a standing ovation.
Okay, all right.
It's patience faller. But anyway, the point I'm making is that, you know, 144 people die because we in Gauteng say, no, we're going to stop a perfectly good contract and pass some money to our own guys who are elsewhere. You know, if you follow the trail in Komani, you might find that there is somehow that chicken that is being bought, there's a middleman or woman taking a cut, and that's how we get to this amount. And it's all patronage. Mm-hmm. So at a very high level, people stealing. 19 billion rand lost at Eskom. At the municipality in Komani in the Eastern Cape, a guy spends 90,000 rand on KFC. And there is a real connection. They know nothing will happen to them. And at the end of the day, the discussions we always have about the institutions. Why isn't this person being prosecuted by the NPA? But why hasn't the NPA prosecuted Jacob Zuma and others who are implicated in state capture? Why are the people who wasted more than 100 million rand at Frieda Dairy Farm out on the streets and laughing at us right now? It's because those institutions have been undermined. So we once again need to go back and really think hard about, do we have the institutions to catch people, to put them in jail as they should be, or have they been so undermined and hollowed out that we can only laugh at what happens in Komani, but we know that nothing will happen. And I think that's a tragic state of
it really is, Justice.
Of affairs.
I mean, I'm tired of laughing. I mean, I have good places to laugh. This isn't one of them. But just finishing up, you mentioned Jacob Zuma. What's happening with this court case? Back in court tomorrow?
Back in court tomorrow. You know, there's a bit of a controversy. The ANC in KwaZulu-Natal said it will go to Cyril and say, oh, man, come on, let's go and support him in his trouble. The ANC chairperson in KwaZulu-Natal, Sihle Zikalala, says it has not changed his mind and says, no, as the ANC, we can't go and support people like that. So I think it's interesting that Jacob Zuma seems to be losing a bit of support in KZN. Not all of it, but just a little bit. And I'm quite interested to see how that's going to pan out. But Jacob Zuma, you know, I think some things are beginning to change. And I hope, you know, my faith is not misplaced. But you remember for 10 years, Jacob Zuma had all these charges hanging over him. And he kept on saying, I want my day in court. And nothing happened. He didn't go to court. Well, he's out of power on February 14th. And since then, this is his third court appearance. His son appeared in court two times just the other week. Some of his cronies appeared in court on the Frieda matter, little by little. The people implicated in state capture are beginning to appear in courts. And I hope we are building a strong enough case against them. But Jacob Zuma had so many issues, so many court cases against him. I suspect we're going to hear more and more about him in the future, because he will be appearing and appearing and appearing and appearing and appearing. That man's going to be in court for a long time. So, you know, put on your seatbelts here.
It's going to be a bumpy one. Mr. Malala.
It's going to be lit. So, yeah, Jacob Zuma in court, and he'll be, you know, it's another corruption trial. I don't know whether this one will begin proper or it will be postponed again for more preparation and so forth. In the last one, there were disputes about Jacob Zuma's legal representation and so forth. And I think that will continue to be an issue in the future. As you know, Jacob Zuma is not shy to draw out a court process. So, you know, he doesn't mind asking for... He doesn't mind asking for a postponement now and again. So I suspect we're going to see him, you know, to see him apply again for a postponement of this one and that one and so forth. But he'll be back. So yeah, Jacob Zuma again and again.
All right, Justice. Well, more importantly, when are you going to be back? I hope you get over this illness. We'll see you next week.
We're seeing you next week, and I hope I'll definitely have kicked it. You know, I'm tired now of this. I'm tired of being sick. But I'll see you in studio next week with Sia, Gareth, everyone in there. I mean, you know, guys, I'll see you next week.
All right, fantastic. Justice. Well, thanks for your time as always. The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's, here every Thursday with Justice Malala. And if you did miss out on any of those things and any of the talking points, well, you can just go on to cliffcentral.com and you'll find previous episodes there.
This is cliffcentral.com.